WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The U.S. military carried out an overnight operation to evacuate the U.S. Embassy in Khartoum, the capital of Sudan, which has seen continued violence between rival military factions. The U.S. Embassy is now closed, and there are still at least an estimated 16,000 American citizens in Sudan. ABC News contributor Steve Ganyard, a retired State and Defense Department official, says
pulling U.S. citizens out of a war zone is always a challenge. In the case of Sudan, it's particularly hard because Sudan is so far inland. Now that the airfield has been closed, the airspace has been closed.
Former Vice President Mike Pence, speaking in Iowa, said he would support a federal ban on abortion that breaks with former President Trump, who says it should be decided by states. Retailer Bed Bath & Beyond's filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. It says all of its stores and its Bye Bye Baby locations will remain open. And Ken Potts, one of the last two living survivors of the USS Arizona's, died at 102. This is ABC News. There were no injuries reported after a fire during a show on Tom Sawyer Island at Disneyland in California Saturday. The extent of the damage is not known. Disney's the parent company of ABC News. A bear attack in Connecticut left a woman injured as she tried to protect her dog.
The bear in Avon, Connecticut, north of Hartford, seemed to be irritated by barking dogs, including Tom Armstrong's and a woman's.
The bear got a little sketchy and kind of headed back into the woods. And then her dog started barking at the bear, and the bear kind of reacted by lunging at the dog.
And then
the woman put herself between her dog and the bear.
And
the bear got her a couple times.
Wildlife officers killed the bear. The woman, 74, not hurt critically. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
A week after Oscar-winning actor Jamie Foxx was hospitalized for what his daughter called a medical complication. Complication has not been specified, but People says the 55-year-old is awake and alert while still hospitalized. Brian Clark, ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold. 1993 to 1999. And again, 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Two American banks collapsed in the past week. As Eric Tegedoff reports, some consumers are considering alternatives like credit unions.
Troy Stang is head of the Go West Credit Union Association, which represents more than 300 credit unions in Oregon and 5 other states. He says tumult in the financial market historically generates interest in the local structure of credit unions.
Whether it was with the dot-com bust, whether it was with the activities that led up to the Great Recession, consumers at their kitchen tables started having these conversations more intentionally about who is it that we do our financial services with.
Silicon Valley Bank's collapse is the second largest bank collapse in U.S. history. To get depositors their money, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation has stepped in. Stang notes that National Share Insurance Fund, administered by the National Credit Union Administration, is the equivalent regulator for his institutions and is paid for by the credit union system. Stang says credit unions are not-for-profit and member-owned.
We're not accountable to Wall Street investors. We're not accountable to other forces outside of our membership. And so it's a much different model.
Stang says many of the credit unions in his association have spent the last week reassuring customers and noting differences in their institution structure from others. He adds a strong financial system is important for consumers, regardless of which institution they bank with. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the gravedigger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standing room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, out come ticket.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football, fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
We are back for this, our second hour here on Morning Cannolis, our weekly examination, our analysis, our discussion of the major news stories in law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. Always interested in your comments, your calls, your questions. And indeed, we're going to start this second hour with comments and questions, maybe some calls as well from you. We'll begin with Joe from Madison, who is calling in. Joe, glad to have you with me once again this Saturday morning.
Thank you for all the information about the Dominion suit. That's really, really important. And the detail that you brought to the discussion is very helpful to understand where things were. I wanted to just, this is kind of a broad thing, but I hope it will bear fruit when looking at this Dominion case and also looking at the situation of the Supreme Court and Judge Thomas's hijinks, might be a nice way of saying it. This week in news, the NFL released information that they had from an investigation that they had on players betting that there were, I think, five or six Detroit Lions players who were investigated and found to have been betting, which the NFL does not allow, not even if it's not your games. You aren't allowed to bet on any NFL games or the draft. You're just not allowed to do that. So it started with the Detroit Lions players. It's gone to staff, and it also includes now players, I guess, from the Washington Commanders. And I think one of the things that's interesting about this is that it's very important to the NFL, apparently, to route out and find out if people are cheating, betting on games or somehow affecting any of the outcome of how things go. And this business is really big on it has to look fair. If players are betting on games, out they go. So I throw that into the mix because then we look at Judge Thomas, you know, one of nine lifetime appointments, who says about the shenanigans he was engaged with, quote, "I didn't know it was wrong." That was one of the things he said. And, quote, I'm not going to do it anymore. You know, that's going to be his excuse. And so far, I know that there have been some within the Senate that have been looking to try to shake this down a little bit. But I guess I'm sort of appalled that Roberts, the person who is oversees the Supreme Court and the history and the look of it, has not come down like a pail of bricks on this person for making this court look like it's cheating. I mean, and then we have, you know, the situation with Fox News and the Dominion lawsuit, where obviously they were cheating. I mean, it was so apparent that you said that the judge overseeing this case said the jury doesn't even have to decide whether they were lying or not. That was apparent. It was just whether they did it with malice or not. That's all that they were trying to find out. So we're stuck with these two things, and I think they're important to look at. Is number one, what do we call it when you have such rank corruption in the Supreme Court, and when we have the situation where an entity calls itself Fox News, when any news organization will tell you if they get something wrong, if it is wrong, absolutely, you go to your corrections, go on air, and you say, "We got it wrong, here's why, and here's why we're going to attend to it." And I guess one of the other, so I'd like to talk about that, because I don't think we should call it Fox News anymore. It's not a news organization. News organizations correct it when it's wrong. And there have been no on-air, you know, mea culpas, we did it wrong, and we're going to do a better job into the future. In the same way, I'm curious about the idea that we speak of damages, and it's damages for Dominion Voting Company, which obviously very clearly is damaged. But I would argue that all of us have been damaged by
Absolutely.
A national news organization right. that lied to us, and to the point of affecting our election. And so I'm curious about, you know, what kind of recourse is there for an individual citizen or a group of citizens, League of Women Voters, whatever, to come to the courts to say, we were damaged by what Fox News did. I'm interested in your speculation on this, and I frame it with, let's look at what the NFL did to root out corruption in their ranks, and then look at what Fox News did and the Supreme Court. I don't see much.
Right.
It seems like they need the NFL offering some standards.
Right.
So thanks, Jim. I appreciate your thoughts on this.
Great, Joe. Thanks. You a lot to unpack there, but all to a very important point about integrity in our systems, right? And especially that point that you made about the damages we all suffer. Courts, of course, focus upon parties and the specific things here that Dominion voting machines suffered. But you're absolutely right, especially in a situation where you've got broadcast airwaves, and this is going out to quite literally tens of millions of people consuming it and believing it. What is the impact not only on them, but again, more broadly, upon our national discourse, our national status? Huge numbers of people today continuing to believe that the 2020 election was stolen, in major part because of the daily infusion of that lie into our national discourse, our national discussion. And it is difficult to capture that, of course. But this all goes to, if you want to get legal about this once again, the issue of standing, coming forth and saying that I have been damaged in a way that is cognizable, that I can come forward and say that for this reason, based upon what the defendant has done, I have suffered in some cognizable way. It is going to be difficult, admittedly, to put a dollar figure or even any kind of calculus to that broader focus on what it is that Fox News did to us as a nation and continues to do to this day. By the way, agree entirely. In the wake of this, the notion, even before this, the notion that this is a news operation, plainly a misnomer of the highest level. The one aspect of this that you've heard me rail against in the past or advocate for perhaps more positively is just this, that this kind of thing, and the reason why I'm spending so much time on that this morning, as have others, is that our recourse perhaps come in shouting this from the rooftops, from talking not only to your family members who continue to subscribe to the things that Fox News says on a regular basis, that the importance of the result here, $800 million, the disclosures, the items, the decisions made by the judge here, all of that, it is not difficult to understand. The message is clear, and we need to work more strongly to send the clarity, not in partisan motivation, not by political animation, but to all Americans that this horrific thing happened, and it compromised us as our nation, and this is not the exposition of the First Amendment. To sort of codify, Joe, your very important point, the First Amendment, thus our defamation law, does not permit you to lie. That is a fundamental notion. That instruction, and then also somehow the sense that there needs to be more than just this. There needs to be more than simply damages, monetary damages, going to the particular plaintiff here. But America needs to understand that it too was damaged. We continue to work on that by talking more about this and, again, doing things to ensure that people understand that what happened on Tuesday, announced this past week, is no small thing, and that it should prompt people to, you know what, to turn off Fox News. If you've lied about this significant thing, what else are you lying about as well? And should discredit not only Rupert Murdoch and his new organization, but those people who perpetrated these lies on air. Very significant points. Joe, a lot. We'll talk about Clarence Thomas later on in this hour as well. We've got other callers on the line, which we're delighted to take as well. Let's talk first with Gary from Sussex. Gary, thanks for your call in this morning.
Okay. Jim, I've called in, I talked to you, I've listened to you many times in the Devil's Advocate and everything. I'm not trying to trap you. I'm going to ask you a couple questions. I just want to know what your opinion is.
Sure.
Because everything that I give is my opinion and how I look at it. And your listeners can understand how conservative looks at things.
Sure.
All right. Now, as far as, let's go back to the shooting in Tennessee. The legislators go in there and they start marching around and causing all sorts of chaos and problems. Now, let me ask you, there's supposed to be a semblance of dignity and calmness when you go into the Capitol, and same thing when you go into court. So let's say if you're going to be going into a trial and you don't like how the judge is handling things. Now, Jim, what would happen to you if you got a bullhorn and got in the judge's face and started yelling and screaming at him and say, I don't like this, and then getting all the people that were sitting there listening to you, agreeing with you, and then starting to stomp their feet and yelling? What would happen to you?
Gary, it's a great question. Thanks for the call. I know you. I suspect you have one of the things I would love to engage you in this conversation. Let's do that. Let's talk about Tennessee for a moment because it is on my agenda as well. So what we have here, you've got Justin Jones, Justin Pearson, Gloria Johnson, these three legislators who led these very vocal, very raucous, you're absolutely right, Gary, protests in the well of the Tennessee legislation. Legislature in the wake of the three killings of the three children and the killings of three children and the adults in Nashville, another horrific event in America. And so, again, your question goes to issues of rule of law. Why? Because we can all acknowledge, and we do acknowledge, Gary, you and I agree, as I suspect everyone does, disruptive what they did. Absolutely. This very, very vocal invocation, not just of their position, but shouting it. And the question is, what is the appropriate response, right? Plainly, if I go into court, as you just indicated, and I were to do that sort of thing, there are rules for the court and there are rules for the legislature as well. So my approach on this and my response to what happened is that the response of the legislature to expel them when you've got other remedies was not the appropriate remedy in this situation. You can censure them. You can do other things, as you can do in the Wisconsin legislature here. You can make findings, in fact. You can reprimand them. You can do other things with respect to their specific involvement in things on the floor, in other committees, those kinds of things. You can respond to what can appropriately be viewed as disruptive behavior, even in the midst of their protest. The objection that I have, and I think that many people have, to what happened in Tennessee was the nature of the response, expulsion. Throwing them out when, in fact, there are lower remedies that could, in fact, have been applied here and things that could have been pursued by those legislators. By doing that, they effectively, for the brief period of time that Jones and Pearson and the two of them were out of office, they were not representing their constituents. Now, they're back in office by virtue of the reinstatement votes from the county commissioners, the Metropolitan Council. They came back. They've got to stand for re-election at some point down the road. But as in all things, my approach to this is balance. And yes, indeed, if I were in court and do that, would I get sanctioned by the judge? You bet I would. Absolutely. It's appropriate to respond in kind to the kind of behavior. I probably would not get my license revoked in that moment. The judge could not do that. But it would be appropriate for her or him to impose some kind of sanction on me. The question is whether this particular sanction was the kind that was appropriate. But Gary, appreciate very much the thought. Always interested in views of a great variety. I'm going to go on in our last minute here in this segment to another caller. Mark, you're calling in also this morning. Glad to have you with us. Mark, are you there with us from Prairie du Sac? Mark, are you with us this morning?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, Mark, go ahead. We've got just a couple of seconds here. I'll take your question, and then we'll answer it perhaps right on the other side.
Yeah, I did disagree with Gary and some, because raucous behavior in a chambers like that is nothing out of line. That you're right in terms of it was excessive in terms of punishment. That, and for the getting to the Supreme Court, these constructionists on the Supreme Court.
All right, Mark, you know what I'm going to do? Hold that thought. I'm going to take your comment right after the
Moms, they really are the best. So this year, give her something really special. Write a special message for your mom, and we'll broadcast it right here on this station throughout the entire weekend of Mother's Day. Call 608-819-8255. 608-819-8255.
If you own a small to medium-sized business that kept employees on payroll through COVID, you may have a big cash refund waiting for you. The Employee Retention Credit is a tax credit of up to $26,000 per employee. And now, more businesses than ever qualify. The experts at RefundsPro.com specialize in cutting through the red tape of qualifying for this government program. Most of their refunds are over $100,000. Even businesses that have received PPP funds may be eligible. And there are absolutely no fees unless you receive a refund, so there's no reason not to apply. If your business experienced shutdowns, limited capacity, supply chain challenges, or reduced revenue due to COVID, you likely qualify. RefundsPro.com has already helped hundreds of businesses. So don't lose the refund you're owed by missing the deadline. Get started today with a free 5-minute questionnaire at RefundsPro.com. That's refunds with an S, pro.com.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast. Overcast this afternoon with a chance for mixed precipitation becoming all rain. Highs around 45, northwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Chance for mixed precipitation tonight. Lows dip down to about 29. Cloudy, partly cloudy tomorrow. Chance for scattered showers. High at 48. Temps below average Tuesday and Wednesday with highs in the upper 40s. Mixed precipitation possible at times Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 37.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for Rational Talk Radio.
And we're back. We're taking some wonderful callers of all political varieties here this morning. Appreciate all of that balance and good discussion right before the break. Mark, talking with you, Mark, about your response to what happened in Tennessee, the expulsion, and then the return of these legislators, Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, also joined by Gloria Johnson, although she was not expelled, out of the Tennessee legislature. And right before the break, Mark, you were articulating your opposing view to what Gary had said about what was happening there in Tennessee. Why don't you go ahead and give me your full thought?
It was excessive, and as you said, there's another legislator that urinated on another legislator's seat, and he was not expelled. So it just gives support to the fact that what you said was that it was excessive is correct. But getting back to the Supreme Court, and unfortunately I don't have my copy of the Federalist Papers with me right now, but I know that in Article 3 of the Constitution, it does not say that the Supreme Court justices have a lifetime appointment. It's simply based on good behavior. Well, in terms of when they're behaving correctly, exhibiting good behavior, and of course Clarence Thomas has not. I mean, it's also not enumerated in the Constitution. The Supreme Court decides the constitutionality of laws, as pointed out by Hamilton, I think Federalist 75. But so, I mean, that I would challenge, why is it that a citizen who is not completely versed in the law can find these falsehoods that to point out to the Supreme Court, that they maintain that they can decide this stuff, and they're supposedly strict constructionists. Well, if they're strict constructionists, they would actually adhere to what exactly the Constitution says rather than what they want it to say.
Lots of good things here also to unpack, Mark. A couple of things again in our discussion, as always, of civics in the morning. You're absolutely right. Lots of those things not in the Constitution. It was a Supreme Court Chief Justice named John Marshall in a case way back in 1803 that said, we are the department, the Justice Department is the one that, the courts in America are the ones who decide the law. It was a statement in a case called Marbury versus Madison. Also, as you indicated, finds its way into the Federalist Papers, but that is the tradition that has followed since that time. And with respect to the issue of good behavior, that is the way that is described in the Constitution, always interpreted throughout 240 years of our history to mean lifetime tenure. And again, can be revisited at some point down the road, but that is the reason why our federal judges, including those in Texas and the Fifth Circuit and on the Supreme Court as well, have lifetime tenure because of the way that language has been interpreted. We are, in fact, going to get back to Clarence Thomas in just a moment or so as we talk through these issues related to the broader things, I think, Mark, that you had identified here, which goes to integrity once again and the ways in which our Supreme Court judges justices behave, and these specific revelations about Clarence Thomas, his acceptance of gifts, his connections with this Harlan Crowe, this real estate billionaire, and the disclosures not made by him that go to the integrity of the Supreme Court itself. Before we get to that, I'm going to take a couple more callers in this segment and then go back to some of those core issues as well. Gene, you've been on the line for a while here. Gene, calling in from Eau Claire, glad to have you with us again this morning. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for your great show. Never miss it. And I hope everybody's listening because we learn a lot. I would like to bring up an issue real quick related to problems that we've had in our state, and do we have any remedies with Fox because of the big Gableman fraud? I'm sorry, I call it a fraud. I shouldn't be making judgments, but the millions of dollars spent in the investigation based on lies by Fox that we still continue to pay for. I don't know. Do we have standing in something like that? I mean, to me, either it's a huge conspiracy to overthrow our election involving Republicans, Fox News, and others to spread the big lie, or we all have some damages coming, you know, for them basing their investigation on the news from Fox. I don't know. I'm just wondering, just running it by you. Thank you all. I'll hang up. Thank you.
Sure, Gene. Always a good question and comment from you. And that is the thing we wrestle with, right? In the wake of what happened, what we now know about Fox News, this knowing statement on the air that they're misstating knowingly what happened in 2020. What are the long-term consequences of that? And how does that impact Wisconsin, premised in many ways, this investigation by former Justice Gableman into the fraud, the theft reportedly here in Wisconsin, again, premised upon false information. What do we do in terms of damages? Well, we know that there are huge amounts of monies paid for that investigation. Again, as I always have said, this is the time that you petition your elected representatives to remedy that, to try to recover that. And yes, you can go into court. You do, as you indicated, Gene, have to identify some specific basis upon which you have been damaged. You can make the argument. And that's why judges and lawyers are active in these kinds of things, making determinations about whether or not you do have standing. The important thing, as I've said, is continued discussion about these kinds of things and advocacy in those venues where you can, in fact, get some remedies. The legislature is one of them. Courts may well be one of them as well. We're not done, plainly, with this notion that the First Amendment has been abused, I would say, in many ways, by virtue of the kinds of things that Fox News has done. Great comments for thought and for future action as well. I'm going to take at least one more caller here in this segment. Jake, you're calling in this morning as well. Glad to have you with us this morning.
Yeah, I would like to respond to the Republican caller from earlier, Tennessee Gary, who I'm sure is a big fan of Republican Lieutenant Governor of Tennessee, Randy McNally, who's infamous for trolling for young men online. It's really shocking to me that somebody would actually take the position of supporting those neo-Confederate racists in Tennessee who, you know, took out the ultimate punishment there in the legislature on two young black men for speaking their minds. And the First Amendment, yeah, it is guaranteed to everyone in the United States, regardless of your skin color. And also consider the story from 2 days ago, okay? And I'll just read a couple of the opening paragraphs.
All right, and Jake, I've just got a few seconds left, so if you can be brief about that, that would be great.
Yes, I will. A member of GOP leadership in the Tennessee House of Representatives was recently found guilty of sexually harassing at least one legislative intern, likely two, by an ethics subcommittee acting in secret. News Channel 5 investigates learned. About 6 hours after being confronted by News Channel 5 investigates, Representative Scotty Campbell gave up his seat in the Tennessee General Assembly. Campbell, who served as vice chair of the House Republican Caucus, and who recently voted to expel three Democrats who engaged in a gun violence protest on the House floor, had suffered no previous consequences.
Right. And Jake, I'm going to have to bring our conversation right now to an end. We're going to take that up right after the break. Stay with me on that, and we'll continue that conversation.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media.
Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The U.S. military carried out an overnight operation to evacuate the U.S. Embassy in Khartoum, the capital of Sudan, which has seen continued violence between rival military factions. The U.S. Embassy is now closed, and there are still at least an estimated 16,000 American citizens in Sudan. ABC News contributor Steve Ganyard, a retired State and Defense Department official, says,
pulling U.S. citizens out of a war zone is always a challenge. In the case of Sudan, it's particularly
hard because Sudan is so far inland. Now that the airfield has been closed, the airspace has been closed.
Former Vice President Mike Pence, speaking in Iowa, said he would support a federal ban on abortion. That breaks with former President Trump, who says it should be decided by states. Retailer Bed Bath & Beyond's filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. It says all of its stores and its Bye Bye Baby locations will remain open. And Ken Potts, one of the last two living survivors of the USS Arizona's, died at 102. This is ABC News.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Plans for a Microsoft data center on land intended for Mount Pleasant's Foxconn site are moving forward. On Tuesday, the Racine County Board of Supervisors approved the deal for the land sale. It remains unclear how many people will be employed there once work is completed, but if it happens, this will be the first major development in the industrial park since Foxconn began work in 2018 on what was supposed to be an LCD manufacturing plant employing 13,000 people. That never happened. Foxconn currently employs about 1,000. The deal requires Microsoft begin the first phase no later than July of 2026. Wisconsin's statewide tornado drill has been reset for today. Sirens will activate in many counties across the state at 1:45 and 6:45 p.m. The drills are meant to familiarize you with what the sirens sound like so you know when to seek shelter during severe weather. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1. On Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Thank you for listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website, civicmedia.us.
Porque nosotros le brindaremos esa atención, pase lo que pase.
We are back here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you again for joining me this morning as we talk about a number of issues. A lot of them related to integrity in our systems. Appreciate so much all the callers this morning. Right before the break, I was chatting with Jake, who was calling in from California, to identify this additional more than footnotes to the Tennessee story, specifically that a senior legislator there who had previously voted to expel Representatives Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, the legislator named Scotty Campbell. He was found to have violated the legislature's discrimination and harassment policy after complaints against him were filed by two interns to an ethics committee there. Ultimately, he resigns from the legislature. And I think Jake's point was that we've got, again, some hypocrisy here and certainly some inconsistency in terms of the ways in which things are being managed there inside the legislature. Always want to bring to these kinds of things some balance. Again, appropriately calling to the attention of all of us when rules are broken and ensuring that whatever the response to that is, it is commensurate with the nature of the rules that are, in fact, broken. I would offer to you that the First Amendment, advocacy, raucous and disruptive, absolutely, by Representatives Jones and Pearson, did not warrant their dismissal, their expulsion, perhaps some kind of sanction, and plainly, much less significant in the broad scope of things than the kind of thing that we now learn with respect to Representative Campbell. He has resigned, he has left, but no sanctions imposed upon him prior to his resignation. Concern about consistency there as well. I think Jake was making that very important point, once again, about the rule of law in all aspects of our lives. Appreciate all of those very good callers. Appreciate also Kevin calling in this morning. Kevin, your thought or comment about our subject matters this morning.
Hello.
Yes, Kevin, glad to have you with me this morning.
Yes. How long has Clarence Thomas been at the Supreme Court?
So you may recall well that George Bush, the father, was the H.W. Bush, appointed him to the United States Supreme Court. You may recall this fairly raucous time, his confirmation hearing, when Anita Hill came forward and alleged that he engaged in sexual harassment. Prior to that, Clarence Thomas was the head of the National Employment Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and then was elevated by President Bush, George Bush, to the Supreme Court at that time. Huge amount of controversy at that time. He did survive those hearings and has been on ever since that time.
So why do you suspect these allegations are coming out now?
Well, they're unrelated to that particular issue, and so we can chat about those. I appreciate the introduction there. What's happening now, of course, is unrelated to those previous allegations of sexual harassment. This is about disclosures of gifts he has received, other things that implicate ethics issues. In particular, in the last couple of weeks, through some reporting by Politico, disclosures about some week-long retreats in the Adirondacks that he had taken with Harlan Crow, some vacations in East Texas, so a lavish trip to Indonesia, about $500,000 in amount altogether, a number of other things out there, all supported by Harlan Crow, this real estate billionaire. And again, without parsing through all of this, much of that, some of that, not disclosed as the Supreme Court is required to do as a part of their routine disclosures. Why is that important? It's important because of transparency generally. And more importantly, it goes to questions of ethics. Again, you want to make certain that whenever you are in a position of public authority and responsibility, everyone knows about your financial holdings, your relationships. So especially when it comes to Supreme Court justices, you do not have them making decisions that would suggest that they are influenced in any way by friendships, by financial interests, by associations that you have with other companies, other entities out there. It all has to do with transparency. The more important thing I would offer, in addition to these things that are coming out now about the Justice Thomas's receipts of various things, gifts, so forth. And by the way, they continue. He failed to report about $686,000 in income that his wife earned from the Heritage Foundation and some other sources out there. And that leads me to the other issue, which is also a part of the Clarence Thomas analysis these days. This is all about financial things, gifts he's received, his failure to disclose some of these receipts of monies he was getting while he was and is still on the United States Supreme Court. All these revelations coming out. He is amending, to his credit, many of these reports so that they are now a part of the general public information about his sources of income, the things he has gotten. But he should have done that before, and he has acknowledged some of that, although he has not spoken generally about this. More significantly, and the reason I raised the one about his wife, Jenny Thomas, is that issue. And this goes back not only to present times, but recently past events. And that is that Jenny Thomas has also been a very strong advocate for the position that the 2020 election was in fact stolen. And as a result of that, she has been out there advocating for the overturning of the election, and she has a right to do that. That's the First Amendment as well. The concern about Jenny Thomas, not only with respect to this particular financial piece that I just identified, but also generally about the involvement of the Associate Justice on the Supreme Court, is just this. that Clarence Thomas has also been making decisions about things related to January 6th and about the election. Without going into great detail, made decisions about whether or not subpoenas should be enforced, whether or not people should be compelled to testify, whether documents should be produced. All of those matters in the connection with investigations of January 6th, whether or not there should be criminal penalties pursued, investigations pursued. Clarence Thomas was involved in making decisions on the conduct of those investigations, while his spouse was also advocating for matters in that same topic area. She's advocating again that the election was in fact stolen. And the issue is recusal. Under those circumstances where you are partnered with your spouse, your husband, your wife, is involved in the very issues that you are deciding as well on the bench, what judges are obliged to do under the rules of conduct applicable to federal judges at the lower courts is to recuse themselves. So you know what? With respect to this particular issue, because my wife is involved in these same kinds of advocacies, I will not be deciding on whether or not a subpoena should be enforced to pursue an investigation of that very same issue. And he didn't do that. And even though he voted, he was in the minority at the time, his voice was not the one that carried. The Supreme Court, to its credit, did enforce those subpoenas, did compel the production of information, did require that disclosures be made, for example, of various things for the purposes of that investigation. He was not in the majority. Nonetheless, the concern about the ethics of a Supreme Court justice making those decisions while his spouse is involved in the same kinds of things. It has to do, again, with transparency, has to do with ethics, and this notion that we expect our justices, our judges generally, whether they are federal or state, to have not only the appearance of impropriety, but no impropriety at all. And that's the reason why there's a huge amount of focus, to the point that Joe, our earlier caller, made, and this is where I'm going to go with this. What do we do about all this? What do we, whether it's the specific disclosures about his finances, things coming in, reports he did not make about reimbursements for teaching. He was among the top gift receivers, 1998 to the 2003, $42,000 in gifts that he had not previously disclosed. All those kinds of things are relevant. The question is, what do we do about all that, as Joe had asked, and I think as Jake was also, others, callers were also asking as well. The answer is there needs to be an omnibus across the board imposition of an ethics code for our Supreme Court justices. And what are we doing about that right now? Well, we know from the statements made by justices like Elena Kagan, like the Chief Justice as well, that he has said that they're working on such a code. And to the point that a previous caller made, yes, in the meantime, the Chief Justice needs to be patrolling, if you will, needs to be making not just recommendations, but encouraging strongly not only the proper disclosures by Supreme Court justices, but compelling them to make these disclosures as a part of their basic duties and responsibilities. That code, wherever that comes from, has got to be established, has got to be created very soon, and to ensure that the justices are not engaged in this kind of thing that, unfortunately, Justice Thomas has demonstrated, not only with respect to finances, but also, I would offer more importantly, his own spouse. And so those things are out there. We know as well, again, in the context of what is going on out there, that the Congress is also looking at that. We've spoken in the past about the fact that both houses of Congress, the United States Senate and the House of Representatives, both of them have pieces of legislation pending right now to establish codes of ethics that require recusals in these cases of the sort that the Ginny Thomas, Clarence Thomas situation reflects, requiring that disclosures be made about finances, income sources, gifts being made, requires basically that integrity be returned to the Supreme Court so that all of us have the assurance that when decisions are made, they're not prompted by improprieties, they're not prompted by connections, financial, familial, that justices may have, and that they are in fact prompted, and they do in fact recuse themselves when they have those conflicts of interest. That's going on right now in the Congress, and plainly an awful lot of people saying, well, gee, the United States Supreme Court should impose it upon itself before the legislature is required to do that. There is an argument to be made there, but if the Supreme Court doesn't do it itself, an awful lot of people say that the legislature's got to do it. And the final point I'll make about that is Senator Dick Durbin, who is the chair right now of the Senate Judiciary Committee with responsibility of these kinds of things. Dick Durbin has indicated that he has invited the Chief Justice, John Roberts, to appear before him in one of these upcoming hearings coming up in May, in early May, to talk about a number of different things. Presumably high on that list will be this issue of ethics for all of the members of the Supreme Court, not just Clarence Thomas, not just involving his spouse, not just involving finances and income and other gifts being given to you by private individuals, but generally the establishment, the creation of this code of conduct that all of the Supreme Court justices will follow in the future. We'll see whether or not the Chief Justice takes up the senator's invitation and comes to that meeting, that hearing to discuss these all important issues. This is the kind of thing that all Americans should be concerned about because of what we've talked about in this program. Huge numbers of incredibly important issues being decided by our Supreme Court. June is going to be a very significant month once again in the history of our nation as they decide on everything from environmental issues and financial issues and voting rights issues and all kinds of things out there that we've discussed before. We need to ensure that Americans know that our justices, when they make those judgment calls, whatever they decide, are not the products of some inappropriate involvement with other people, with interests that are not publicly known, and their decisions, rather, are premised simply upon the law and the facts. And that's the point. And that's the point about this discussion about Justice Thomas and the other justices on the Supreme Court. We've got a couple of other callers here in our last couple of minutes in this segment. Ken, you're calling in from Sturgeon Bay. Let's hear from you as well. Glad to have you with us.
Yeah, got a question. Fox News desettled. Is a settlement a mission of guilt?
Great question, Ken. So the question is
no, it's not.
Right?
No, it's not. So when you keep going around telling Fox, I'm not Fox or CNN, nobody. But legally, you can't go around telling them they're lying because it's not a mission of lie.
Well,
so basically, you guys could possibly get sued also by telling they lied. That's the legal system.
And Ken, appreciate the observation. So my response to your very good question here is, we know what we know, which is that there has been a payment, there will be a payment, of nearly $800 million by an entity that was sued for defamation. They settled that lawsuit, and they're paying money now to avoid the trial and avoid what would have happened this past week. We'll take a look at what specifically the settlement says. It does not contemplate, we believe, a statement of admission of guilt. You're absolutely right about that. But this is the kind of thing that in the public domain, you can, and I and others can look at that and say, under these circumstances, this entity, which was sued for this very purpose, has paid to settle the claims against them for defamation. And I would offer that speaks volumes about what Fox News is in fact acknowledging in the public domain about what it has done. But appreciate the comment. Appreciate the call, Ken, as we go into our final break here. Stay with us here on Morning Cannolis.
I never seen such a beautiful sight. See love burn on a severy night. I know forever we'll be doing it. Sweet love showing us a heaven.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the grave digger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standing room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, out come tickets.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Overcast this afternoon with a chance for mixed precipitation becoming all rain. Highs around 45, northwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Chance for mixed precipitation tonight. Lows dip down to about 29. Cloudy, partly cloudy tomorrow. Chance for scattered showers. High of 48. Temps below average Tuesday and Wednesday with highs in the upper 40s. Mixed precipitation possible at times Tuesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 37.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
Radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
We are back for this, our final segment of Morning Cannolis on this morning, April 22nd, 2023. Delighted to have some wonderfully engaged and thoughtful callers on all sides of political aisle calling in this morning. Appreciate those comments and questions as always here on our broadcast. And we've got one more in our final segment here. Bill, calling in from Oconomowoc. Bill, your thought or question.
Great show. I want to touch on three topics quickly. Clarence Thomas, Ron Johnson, and Jim Jordan. All of them have committed, possibly committed crimes. The Chief Justice, if he isn't the Chief Justice, I don't know who is. That's his responsibility to take care of this matter. If he refuses to do so, he does. On Jim Jordan, there's a subpoena that's been issued. He hasn't answered it. And now he wants to answer subpoena. He wants to issue subpoenas. He has no integrity. I think his matter needs to be handled immediately with a warrant. I mean, if you don't issue, if you issue a subpoena and you refuse to go, the next step is a warrant. And then last but not least, Ron Johnson, we know at least the records indicate he was involved in illegal electoral votes. He needs to be brought to court. If we don't, our democracy is over. Thank you very much.
Good. Bill, thanks for those comments. Lots to unpack there as well. Always appreciate the perspectives. Let me just pluck up one of those, and that is this issue generally about the imposition of responsibility for responding to subpoenas in all directions. I've said this in the past. We know that we have had some recent successful prosecutions of people who do not, in fact, comply with subpoenas, whether those are congressional subpoenas, certainly court subpoenas as well. Right now, you know well that Jim Jordan is also in a fight with Alvin Bragg, and they're going back and forth about subpoenas issued in both directions, actually just in one direction. Jim Jordan asking for the testimony of a former prosecutor out of Alvin Bragg's office. Bragg's office, the one that has brought these criminal charges under New York state law against the former president. And a judge recently required that the subpoena there be enforced. And again, an awful lot of people out there wondering whether or not there really is jurisdiction for a sitting member of Congress to investigate, to oversee, to take a look at what a state prosecutor is doing. Alvin Bragg had previously pushed back on that a lot. He has recently decided not to pursue an appeal of that, probably for all sorts of strategic reasons there. But the comment that you made just about generally the importance of the rule of law being the subject of discussion and resolution by judges cannot be overstated. Beyond that, the issue about the electoral vote and the electoral college, those matters continue to be the source of investigations, anticipating probably that sometime soon, Fani Willis in Georgia in early May perhaps will ask a grand jury there in Fulton County to return an indictment with respect to violations of the Georgia election law. We also know, of course, that the U.S. Department of Justice is continuing to look at all matters related to that particular event, January 6th, and attempts to overthrow the government at that time. So lots of good thoughts there, Bill, and lots of good things to unpack as we continue to enforce and to support the rule of law generally in America in all those different venues. Appreciate very much the call and the comment. In our last few moments here, I want to comment also upon another rule of law matter that has been out there this past week, and that has to do with the arrest way back in early April, early part of this month, of this first-class airman. His name is Jack Teixeira, for engaging in the distribution of the leaking of dozens of highly classified documents containing an array of our national security secrets, including both matters related to the war in Ukraine and also our relationship with Russia. A couple of things happened this past week in connection with that. We know already that this young man, this 21-year-old, arrested for engaging in that. We recall well, based upon the information provided previously, that he was online with this group called the Thug Shakers Central, a group of chat members, about 50 people, accessed through this Discord process, this online process. He began posting their sensitive information way back in October of last year. Members of the group have pretty much confirmed that, as have other media outlets. A job as an information security specialist, a technology specialist in Massachusetts with the Air Force, gives him top secret access to these materials. If these allegations are true, plainly a violation of what's called the Espionage Act, very important issue, very important prosecution underway by virtue of a complaint issued by the U.S. attorney in Massachusetts. And so this young man, Jack Teixeira, has appeared in the federal court in Massachusetts. Initially, he was scheduled this past Wednesday to come back in for a detention hearing to determine whether or not he should be released on any conditions of release. Typically, when that happens in our federal and state courts, what that means is that the presiding judge is obliged to take a look at whether or not the particular defendant poses a risk of flight, whether that person will come back for future proceedings, and second, whether that person also poses some threat to the security or safety of our community. Risk to the community, risk of flight. Those are the two things that happen. Well, this past Wednesday, although Mr. Teixeira was back in court, that detention hearing did not, in fact, happen because both the prosecution and the defense requested some additional time from the presiding magistrate judge, who said, yes, I'll give you that time. So we'll come back in a couple of weeks to determine whether or not there's a basis upon which to release Mr. Teixeira. Highly unlikely that the federal judge will do that, but that proceeding is still underway. Meanwhile, he is in federal custody, still detained by virtue of this criminal complaint issued by the U.S. attorney alleging these violations, alleging that these postings were in violation of the Espionage Act, compromising our national security. We don't know a whole lot more about exactly the extent to which compromises were made, but we also know from just this past week that although he's accused of leaking these classified documents to a small group of gamers, this sensitive information being out there, there's a whole lot more information now from newly discovered information posted on a larger chat group that includes details about Russian and Ukrainian casualties, activities of Moscow's spy agencies, and updates on aid being provided to Ukraine. Again, the media coming forth looking further into these postings made by Teixeira even before recent times. The user claimed at the time to be posting this information from the National Security Agency, the CIA, and other intelligence agencies, all indicating that there's a huge amount of information out there still to be presented, likely at a detention hearing coming up sometime soon as this very serious matter goes forward in the federal courts. We'll be talking more about that, not only in the future weeks, but down the road. We're going to be talking next time as well about an issue we just began to touch on, which is guns in America coming out of Tennessee, these other places around America. Come back for those future discussions here on Morning Cannolis. Thanking you once again for your time this morning. Appreciate so much the callers. Do that again in future shows. Be back with me again in those future presentations, those broadcasts here of Civic Media. Have a great week, everybody.
One call can do it all. Your business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media Network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the flexibility. You have the control. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid.
Dude,
Did you hear about Cassie and Jake?
No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development?
Nuh-uh.
You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.